Available for the forum for you to visit. And this also means that we'll probably finish earlier than advertised, so it's a win for everyone. The audience should know that the Chamber of Commerce is nonpartisan. We do not support or oppose any political party or candidate. Rather, this forum is part of our educational efforts to help voters make informed decisions at the upcoming elections. We hope that over the course of this forum, you will learn more about these candidates. Yesterday, the Chamber hosted a business walk where we visited 500 businesses over a four-hour period with 55 volunteers. Some of the key challenges generated by our business community yesterday included workforce shortages, a slowdown in sales that began at the beginning of summer, homeless loitering and encampments, and poor police response. On behalf of the business community, the Chamber is especially interested how these candidates plan to address these issues. Tonight, we are asking you, the audience, to prepare candidate questions on index cards that will be collected and moderated by the League of Women Voters. If you have not received an index card at any time throughout the evening, please raise your hand and we'll be happy to bring you one, bring you a second one, and we will collect them for you. The League will review the questions for legibility, clarity, and applicability to both candidates. We will use as many questions as time allows, or about an hour, sometimes combining similar questions, striving to cover a variety of topics. If you don't hear your particular question, it could be combined with other similar questions. Before we move on, I can only imagine that running for office is not for the faint of heart. I truly believe that both of these candidates want to make a difference in our local communities and that they have the best of intentions. And I ask each of you to listen to their answers so that you will be informed when you vote on November 8th or earlier via mail-in ballots, which are scheduled to be mailed out in about 10 days. Next, I'd like to introduce Phil Koziel, Board Chair of the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, who will be introducing the candidates and moderator.
Thank you, Josh. Well, first thing, I want to say hello to everybody and the candidates for District 2 Supervisors. Atascadero Chamber is sponsoring this event tonight, and we want to thank him. My name is Philip Koziel. I'm the chair of the Board of Chambers here at Atascadero for the 2022. I do work at Atascadero State Hospital, and one of my fun things I get to do is go out and meet the community as well as their public information officer. Allow me to introduce you to the District 2 Supervisor candidates. Bruce Gibson. Bruce Gibson is the longest-serving member of San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors and the fifth generation California who lives in Cayucas and Cambria since 1989. Bruce first elected the second district of supervisor in 2006 and re-elected overwhelmingly to public support since. Has long history of community service, starting out in the Cayucas Citizen Advisory Council, Cayucas Land Conservancy. After graduating from Pomona College, Gibson completed his master's degree in geophysics at the University of Hawaii. In 1976, he took a job in Houston, Texas, doing research and exploration in seismology. After 8 years there, Bruce helped establish a seismic exploration program at Rice University, where he also earned his doctorate. He has moved to Cayucas. Bruce switched his fields from geophysics to agricultural farming, the county's oldest commercial orange grove, for 25 years. He now lives in Cayucas with his wife, Sherry, and two energetic Australian shepherds. Please welcome Bruce Gibson. I'd like to enter Dr. Bruce Jones. We're not going to get him confused here. We've got a couple of Bruces in this room. Dr. Jones has spent his entire life listening to people's problems, finding solutions, and giving himself to serve others in every community he lives in. He states that he is not a career politician, nor is he a published public speaker. Rather, he's a humble mammoth of integrity with real leadership experience and qualifications needed to serve District 2. He is a retired orthopedic surgeon from St. Louis, where he practiced at St. Luke's Hospital, the oldest hospital west of the Mississippi, and continued operation. Known for excellence in medicine and outstanding service in the community, Dr. Jones has served on the board of directors at St. Luke's Hospital, guided administrative, budgetary, health policies for the community at large, and San Luis Obispo County. He moved to San Luis County a few years ago to enjoy his retirement years with his family in Templeton, but true to his character, he could not give up. It didn't take long for him to get involved and become a serving in our community. He served 3 years on the Templeton Advisory Group, and two of those years as the chair. Please welcome Dr. Bruce Jones. Now I'm pleased to welcome the League of Women Voters. The purpose of the League of Women Voters is to promote political responsibility through informed and active participation of citizens in government. The League is nonpartisan, like the Chamber. The League does not support or oppose any political party or candidate. We hope that over the course of this program, you will learn more about the candidates and what they hope to do for you. And I will now turn this over to the League of Women Voters. Thank you.
I spent a lot of time on my opening script, and Phil and Josh covered just about everything. So thank you, gentlemen. One thing that I'd like to share with the audience is, first of all, thank you, candidates, for taking the time to participate. Both the candidates have signed an MOU outlining the format and have agreed to best practices in civil discourse. I'm counting on you, the audience, to do the same. I would respectfully ask that you refrain from applause or outbursts, as this can throw off the candidate's ability to answer questions, and it does delay the forum. We would like to ask as many questions as possible tonight. Our questions are coming from you, the audience, but we also had three questions submitted by the Cambria Chamber of Commerce. So our panelists will each have a 3-minute opening statement. Then each candidate will have 1.5 minutes to answer the questions asked. After each candidate answers, we're going to give an opportunity if they have additional information they'd like to add. And then we're going to rotate the order. So Mr. Gibson is going to have the opening statement. Mr. Jones will answer the question first. If time permits, each candidate in reverse order will make a 2-minute closing statement. So with that, thank you, gentlemen, and we'll get started. Mr. Gibson, opening statement.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Thanks to the Chamber, Tascadero High School, the League of Women Voters, and you all for spending time with us this evening. You know, these days I'm often reminded of an old blessing, or maybe it is a curse, that is, may you live in interesting times. Well, goodness knows it's mild to say we live in interesting times. We live in some of the most challenging times that I can imagine occurring since perhaps World War II. We have numerous challenges confronting us, be they social, environmental, and in particular, political. And through all this, we as a society struggle to muster the collective will to take these challenges on. And that struggle reflects upon all levels of government. But it is particularly important to me that local government stands strong to defend our democracy and to get things done. We have a consequential election ahead of us. And tonight we're going to be able to assess differences between the two of us who are running for this office. You'll be able to assess the differences in our priorities. Mine are homelessness, securing our water supply, and addressing the high cost of housing. We'll listen for Dr. Jones, and he can outline his. We'll also be able to assess the differences between us in terms of experience, in terms of knowledge, in terms of the web of relationships that it takes in order to get stuff done. And I think we might also be able to touch a little bit on how we campaign. I'm running my campaign for my 5th term on my track record, and I hope to have a chance to talk a bit about some of the many accomplishments that I've been proud to be part of, working with communities, elected officials, and agencies, both locally and all the way through to upper level. You know, now more than ever, in order to get stuff done, we need vision, we need leadership, we need a commitment to public service. That is what I bring to this job. It's what I have brought to this job, and what I intend to continue bringing to this job as we take on those things that beset us. And I am enormously optimistic that we have a very bright future ahead of us. Again, I thank you for your time, and I look forward to the discussion.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you for being here this evening. I am Bruce Jones, candidate for District 2 Supervisor. I'm not a career politician, as what was said earlier. I'm a retired surgeon. However, I intend on being an effective supervisor on day one. I have experience that will help me do just that. I served more than 3 years on the Templeton Area Advisory Group. This is an elected board that advises the county on issues related to the 58 square mile area of Templeton. Two of the years I was the chairman of that group. In that capacity, I had an opportunity to talk to people like you, farmers, ranchers, homeowners, business owners, applicants for land use applications, and their neighbors. I do understand what people care about in our community, and I plan to represent them well. Also, in that capacity, I became familiar with many of the county ordinances and procedures. Prior to that, I served on the board of a nonprofit hospital. I was on that board because I was the elected president of the medical staff. This hospital had more employees and a larger budget than our county government. There, we had to make decisions that would be useful for the community. We had to make decisions about health care. We had to make decisions about staying within the budget. A nonprofit hospital does not have to make a profit, but it does have to stay afloat. We made those kind of decisions. That experience should help me in evaluating county budgets and management to bring you the most efficient government possible. As a physician on the Board of Supervisors, I will bring some special skills. During the pandemic, the emergency authorization was granted to the health department. What that means in plain English is the board relinquished their oversight authority and allowed the health department to make decisions without that oversight. That authority has been returned to the board, and at this point, the board does have oversight authority. I will be able to talk with the leaders of the health department and listen to their recommendations and look at the data that is behind those recommendations with 50 years of experience in medicine. My ability will then be to teach the other members of the board so that we can exercise real oversight authority. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. First question to you, Mr. Jones. What future projects do you want to accomplish for District 2 if you are elected supervisor?
I think first and foremost, we need to streamline our planning department process. It needs to be better and cheaper and faster. As serving on the Templeton Area Advisory Group, I saw land use projects we were told about projects that would then come to our attention for our limited advisory role 2 or 3 years later. The process here is too lengthy. We need to streamline this. If we streamline the process, we should not have as much trouble with turnover of personnel in that department. I think we can retain better long-term employees if they're satisfied with the way we do things. As a young man, I worked as a carpenter. I know that land use applications do not have to take as long as they take here in our county.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. You know, there are projects, you have programs, projects, you also have physical things that you can see. And I have a long list, far longer than 90 seconds is going to take. But the first big batch of them involves homelessness. We need to house our homeless. We have an unconscionable number of folks living unsheltered. And not only house them, we also need to bring them the services that they need. And those are among other things, but most importantly, mental health services and addiction treatment services, as well as all the other things that they need in order to get on a path to permanent housing. So there are facilities to build, and we've already started that. We've established safe parking programs. I was proud to lead on that. We have pallet shelters in the works. We have tiny home villages, a tiny home village in the works, all of them key to providing shelter so that our unhoused residents have a place to receive services. We have projects to do in our water supply. We need to utilize recycled water, particularly in the Paso Robles groundwater basin. That's going to require bringing a wide group of people together to get that done. We have a project setting up in Cayucas that I'm very proud of to restore the Cayucas Vets Hall. That's going to be key to the small businesses that are all over Cayucas, a key element of our visitor serving infrastructure. I hope we get a chance to talk about that one later, because that one is all about partnerships and working with others to get stuff done.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, is there something you would like to add?
Of course, there are many projects that we all care about. I think it should be noted, if Mr. Gibson's priority is homelessness, he was one of the principal authors of the 10-year plan to end homelessness that was written and prepared in October of 2008 and implemented in 2009. It doesn't look like his 10-year plan to get rid of homelessness worked very well. We do have a current plan that's been championed by the staff at the county. And this plan looks like it's more favorable to results. It involves centralizing some things, and I think it's likely to work better. It's a 5-year plan to reduce half of the homelessness. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add anything?
It's amusing that Mr. Jones references my 10-year plan to end homelessness, since for the last 10 years, our board has been governed by an ultra-conservative board majority that would rather spend its money paving roads than actually diverting funds into helping the homeless. That is a literal conversation we had on the dais when I argued against putting $3 million into more road paving when we had a serious mental health issue right in front of us. The overall effort at the county is broad. And we have to juggle a lot of different things. We have to make tough decisions in every instance in allocating scarce resources. But we have to keep our eye on the fact that we have a huge homeless problem. We have water basins that are in serious decline. We have a cost of housing that is unconscionable and is starting to, not just starting, it has been affecting our economy for a long time. So rather than assess blame, we need to get our nose down and get to work.
Thank you. Second question, Mr. Gibson. Yep. Do you support the establishment of an independent redistricting commission for San Luis Obispo County? If not, why not?
I absolutely do support such a commission, and in fact, I brought that idea to the board as we discussed the drawing of the current district lines, which, as I think you all know, are the subject of litigation right now. Elected officials should not be in charge of choosing their voters. Voters should be in charge of choosing their elected officials. We're seeing this actually a trend happening. There are about, I think, 4 counties currently that have independent redistricting commissions. We just had state legislation passed that adds 3 more to that list, and a conversation going on in the legislature to mandate that for all counties. But it's a fundamental aspect of democracy that the communities of interest that get to choose supervisors should have some commonality, some sense. And when district boundaries are drawn for purely political reasons, that degrades our democracy and it lessens us as a community. So I am wholeheartedly in support of an independent commission handling our redistricting.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
I am not in favor of an independent commission. I believe that if elected officials draw the maps, then they're responsible. If they draw maps that are not fair, they have to face re-election. It's interesting that a lot of discussion has been around the districts, and it's always so. Those that feel they're favored by redistricting favor it. The next time around, if it's a little different, they're against it. We reviewed the maps on TAG, and I was asked as the chairman to read my recommendations in November regarding the mapping, and I'll read what I said because it was, I was commissioned by the board for, with by unanimous decision of TAG. The TAG board unanimously voted to recommend that Cal Poly not be in the same district as is in the same district with the city of San Luis Obispo in order to remain maintain communities of interest, and that redistricting follow traditional redistricting principles that comply with the Fair Maps Act. The reason we made that recommendation was because the previous map had a narrow ribbon of land that connected Cal Poly to the Atascadero map, hardly a fair map.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Mr. Jones may have lost something when he indicated that the consequence of drawing a gerrymandered district is for the gerrymanderers to face re-election in districts that they purposefully drew to favor their own re-election, and in our case, cement minoritarian rule in our county. That's not the way it works. The authors of this map, I shouldn't call them the authors, the enablers of this map, the three supervisors on our board who voted for it, are facing the court. And the court has said that on the merits of this case, it looks like the plaintiffs are going to prevail. That's costing the county a whole lot of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, in an effort to, again, tilt the power, take it away from the people, and cement a minority having control here. I don't think it's going to work. I know it's not going to work in this district. It's not going to work in court. So we'll look forward to the opinion of the court, and we'll be moving on.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
The only person in this room that got to vote on that map is Mr. Gibson. Thank you.
Okay. All right, moving on to the next question. Please keep your comments to yourselves. Thank you. Appreciate that. Mr. Jones, what are your views about election security in San Luis Obispo County?
I have said this before, in fact, in this room with the primary debate. I think that there is some concern by many citizens about election integrity. And one way to reassure them that there's no problem would be to go back to identification, verification, and paper ballots, and I think to make everybody confident with the elections, that's the direction we should go.
Mr. Gibson.
Well, what we hear from Mr. Jones is a right out of the songbook of the National Republican Party, who is trying to sow doubt, trying to sow uncertainty about the integrity of our elections. And one of the things that I had to smile when he said we should go back to paper ballots. We use paper ballots right now, folks. Remember how you fill out, you put the little bubble thing in? So, you know, these concerns that people have voiced to us, completely vague, completely unsubstantiated. And it was actually Supervisor Pichong who made a very, very good point. If anybody has evidence of election fraud, of problems with our election system, they should take that evidence to law enforcement, to our DA and to our sheriff. To date, no one has, because there is no such evidence. So the parade of individuals that we see in front of our Board of Supervisors voicing concerns, we can only interpret that as a concerted effort to try to cast doubt about the election integrity in this county. I will tell you, there is no doubt about it. Our elections are fair, they are accurate, and they are above reproach. So fundamentally anti-democratic effort, and my opponent is enabling that conversation to persist.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
Only what I said, paper ballots with with verification of identity.
Mr. Gibson, if you care to add anything.
I guess he didn't quite get the memo. We use paper ballots, and voter identity is a classic voter suppression technique. You know, again, we've seen it in the, you know, this has been written, in a number of instances, and again, it's all part of a concerted effort to try to undermine the confidence in our elections. It's almost beyond a belief that we're still having these conversations. But we'll leave it at that. I have every confidence in the system and in the personnel who run elections in this county, as was proven by the recount of the District 4 election in the primary, which did not change one vote.
Thank you. Question four, Mr. Gibson. What concerns do you have about the possible extension of Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant?
Well, in my position on Diablo Canyon has always been that I am more than accepting of its operation in our county if the public safety of our county is taken into account and that every effort is made to protect the public. The benefits of Diablo Canyon to the state as a whole are indisputable. It is nearly carbon-free electricity, and I believe that it's possible that nuclear power can be operated safely. But you will note that any risk from any kind of mishap at Diablo Canyon visits upon the County of San Luis Obispo and its residents. And so the safety of its operation is what I care about first and foremost. There's a lot of deferred maintenance out there that, because of the planned shutdown, has been left undone. There are seismic retrofits that need to be undertaken. I've heard, and you may have seen in the Tribune, an editorial by a first responder who says the emergency response system needs to be upgraded. We have the issue of spent fuel remaining both in pools and in dry casks. And so if these items, and I've been involved in the discussion of them for a long time, and contrary to what my opponent's going to say, I have never voted to close Diablo Canyon. If those issues are taken into consideration appropriately, I think we can benefit from another 5 years of its operation.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
I favor keeping Diablo Canyon power facility open. It's a baseload facility. And when the wind isn't blowing and the sun's not shining, we need a source of electricity. Without it, we will import electricity from out of state that will be made by burning natural gas or coal. If we care about carbon emissions, we should favor Diablo Canyon. Also, this facility, according to the MIT Stanford study, could easily be used for desal of water. Now, what does that mean? Well, what it means in this facility, according to their study, is a cubic meter of water, 264 gallons, could be produced for less than a dollar. We need water here, and if we come to a point where we don't need Diablo Canyon for our electrical grid, we might consider using it for desal. It would certainly solve a lot of the problems we have with water. Also, we have to take into consideration that this facility provides about 1,500 jobs in our community, and it is one of the few things we export from our county, electricity for the rest of the state. About 8.5% of all the electricity in California.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, is there anything you'd like to add?
Oh, absolutely. Diablo Canyon is a big topic, and there's a lot more of interest in San Luis Obispo County that I didn't get to speak to in the first one. One of them is about planning for our economic future, because at some point Diablo will close. You know, the planned extension is for 5 years, and I expect if that goes through, it will. But we need to be sure that how it is operated and the choices made there don't get in the way of our economic future. And we had a robust program going forward, envisioning a clean tech park there That's gotten put on hold. We have an opportunity to develop offshore wind that will be the future of energy in this country and in this county, and we can't let Diablo get in the way of that. We also have 12,000 acres and 14 miles of nearly pristine coastline that have long been desired as a land conservation project by members of our communities. And we need to take the opportunity of this extension to nail down the conservation. That is fundamental to our visitor-serving future.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you like to add anything?
Yes. Clearly, Mr. Gibson and I do differ on Diablo Canyon. He talks about being supportive of it now, but earlier this year, when the Board of Supervisors wanted to send a letter to our governor asking for help in keeping the Diablo Canyon open, he was the only vote against sending that letter. He has clearly been in opposition to Diablo Canyon's operation. We need this facility to prevent brownouts, blackouts, and without it, our cost of electricity is going to go up. Thank you.
Mr. Jones, question five. What can San Luis Obispo County do to address our water issues?
I have lots of thoughts on that. What we need to do is increase the supply of water. There's three points that I think are important. We can develop new sources of water, like recycling more wastewater. Currently, in California, we dump about twice as much treated wastewater into the ocean than we recycle. Also, desalinization would help to increase the supply. Diablo Canyon would be a good place to do that. Number two, we can expand our storage capacity. If we put in retention basins in times of flooding over sandy soil, this water will percolate into our underground aquifers and recharge them. Doing retention basins is not terribly expensive and should be done. Also, if we repair the Santa Margarita Lake Dam, this dam can hold back more water and we can store more water in that reservoir. There is state money available to do just that. There's $100 million set aside for this, and we should tap into that money and restore that dam. The other thing we can do is reduce water demand by drought-resistant landscaping and by high-tech irrigation. Using high-tech irrigation, we can reduce water consumption by 20%.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. Those are a number of interesting projects, some perhaps more feasible than others. But to me, the base need in dealing with our water is political will and a set of relationships that will bring the affected parties to the table to have a serious conversation about something that's been put off for far too long. Yeah, the basics of balancing that budget are pretty clear. We need to increase supply to the extent we can. The hard conversation there is who's going to pay for that project that's going to increase supply. And I think that's going to be a very interesting question as we look into desal, which is a great opportunity. On conservation, we got to have the hard conversation as who cuts back. As you look out in our fantastic wine growing area in the Paso Basin, which is the poster child of a basin in crisis, we have some grape growers there who are using over twice as much water per acre as others. And that's got to be reconciled. That's got to be figured out. And part of that will be a market-driven solution, and part of that will be a regulatory solution, because the current 13,000 on average acre foot per year overdraft of that basin is going to crater our wine industry if we don't step up and start having those hard conversations. That takes political will, that takes leadership, and it takes vision for how we move forward in a difficult situation.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
I'd like to just add a little bit about what I was talking about at the end of my earlier conversation. If you put in ground sensors for moisture, you use drip irrigation, You have weather stations that measure wind and temperature. It's well proven that for grape cultivation, you can reduce water consumption by about 20%. That's huge. We should be helping our agricultural segment to implement these changes because it's good for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add anything?
Yeah, again, a technical solution, but what that misses is the fact that some grape growers put a lot of water on as a business model. They grow specifically for volume and not for quality. Absolutely true. And I've talked to a lot of really forward-thinking grape growers who say you can grow quality grapes with less than an acre foot per acre a year on those grapes. That's fantastic. But the guy who's got the big vineyard, who's selling to the bulk winemaker, who doesn't care about quality and only cares about quantity, is going to throw a wrench in that. So we got to grab onto that. I think there's a lot of opportunity in ag technology. Irrigation is one of them. Software to manage operations is another. Aerospace has yet more applications. So yes, bring all the technology to the table, but again, the fundamental aspect of the argument over a scarce and diminishing resource is a human one, and in the end, a political one.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, what can San Luis Obispo County do to reduce building fees and the cost of building?
Well, at the county, we are always looking to streamline our process. To the extent we can streamline our process, we can reduce the fees, because our fee structure is set up in a way that we have to justify the amount of time it takes to process a permit. Now, the challenge there is that in processing a building permit, that we have a number of state-level requirements that we have to meet. Environmental review, which is everybody's favorite punching bag, and I get frustrated with it as well, is the one we hear the most about. But the reality is that California has a statute called the California Environmental Quality Act, and if we do not do that review properly, it's subject to litigation. Perhaps too easily subject to litigation, that's a point that I'd be willing to discuss, but the fix is a state level one. So the thing to know is that the unaffordability of housing is not fundamentally a matter of county fees. Our county's fees are low compared to our surrounding counties and certainly compared to our cities. In fact, and we can talk about housing affordability later, but if it, in the workforce range, there's probably an unaffordability gap of a couple hundred to $300,000. Our fees fully loaded for processing that permit are maybe 10% of that gap. So yes, we'll always try to do it more efficiently and more quickly, but the problem is much bigger than simply the fees that are charged to process a permit.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
We definitely need to look at our building and planning process. Certainly there are other parts of the country that process building at much less cost. Even a few years ago here, it was at much less cost. In a typical market priced home in our county, we are coming up with about $70,000 worth of fees and taxes that come basically from our planning process. It's true, the planning process is related to hours spent, but we need to do some things to reduce that cost. And one thing we could do would be to come up with several house plans that would be automatically approved. A 1,000 square foot, a 1,200 square foot, a 1,400, and so on, that if you built those plans, you could alter the outside appearance, what they call the elevation, but if you built that plan, you do not have to go through certain processes. We need to be able to build homes that people can afford to live in, and we have artificially made that too expensive. I will work to streamline the process in our planning department, and I will also push that they have pre-approved plans that can be used. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, anything to add?
Thank you. I'd be interested in Mr. Jones' numbers on that. He said much less cost some years ago. I'd be interested in what those numbers actually are. In recent years, I can tell you that I have not seen a large increase at all in our building fees. In fact, a number of them have come down as we've figured out ways to make processing more quick. And I'd point out again, we've had a conservative board majority for 10 years, and they're not about raising fees. We have to kick and scratch and to try to get just to full cost recovery. About pre-approved plans, we have those already. We actually started that when I was first in office. We called them secondary dwelling units there. We got a set of pre-approved plans set up for that. We were very proud of that. Then came the Great Recession. Nobody was building them. Fast forward, we now have accessory dwelling units. I guess when you rebrand, it's always a good thing. But we're working with a couple of cities to actually revive that program, and that should be a good one for those who want it.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
Only that pre-approved plan should be for market rate houses as well, not just for secondary houses.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Jones, what is your position on mandatory vaccines?
I have lots of feelings about that. I do not think that we should have mandatory vaccination for employment. I don't think that a sheriff should be sent home if he's not vaccinated, or a teacher should be sent home if they're not vaccinated. I also think that parents should make the decision for their children about vaccination. I will use an example, the COVID vaccination. There is no child in our county, even those with diabetes and heart disease, that have died from COVID, and yet people are talking about mandatory vaccinations. In fact, earlier this year, our Board of Supervisors looked at a Senate Bill 866 that allowed 12-year-old children to decide on vaccination without their parents' consent. I would be opposed to that. I think that parents should be able to make those decisions. It's our responsibility to provide information to the parents, but it's the parents' responsibility to make those decisions. It should be noted that Mr. Gibson, at the meeting where that was discussed in late January, didn't feel the way the majority of the board felt in terms of the legislative lobbying agenda. He favored that bill in the vote at that time.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Jones grossly misrepresents my position, and in fact he fabricates a position. The action before the board was to oppose this bill. Without any language or analysis of the bill, I refused to take a position. You know, the whole premise of this question seems to invite a big argument that's basically part of the culture wars. And that's really sad, especially coming from a man with a medical degree, when vaccines have been a fundamental part of our public health success for well over 100 years. You look at where we have come in terms of eradicating smallpox, to my knowledge, almost eradicating polio until an anti-vax movement sprung up, and now we're seeing polio starting again in this country. That's just a truly extraordinary. I see by the demographic distribution of ages in the audience here that most of us went to school when vaccines were required to go to a public school. And there was a reason for that, a good, logical, fact-based reason. That is to prevent the spread of disease, to protect health, and to save lives. And so that becomes controversial in this day and age is a sad example of the politicization of just about everything that we do.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
I believe my comments were about parents' rights to make those decisions for their children and not having 12-year-olds decide medical treatments.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add anything?
Well, you know, again, we've got to get past this culture warrior mentality, and we have to get back to fact-based decision making. You know, Mr. Jones indicated that he was going to be able to, if elected a supervisor, offer medical advice to our public health experts. That's interesting. Our county doesn't do orthopedic surgeon. I've never been called on to do orthopedic surgery, and our health department hasn't been called on to do orthopedic surgery. But Dr. Jones well known that if you apply as a doctor to work in a hospital, you're required to practice in your specialty. Orthopedic surgeon's not going to be allowed in to do plastic surgery or to practice cardiology. So I think we have to look at the public health facts, and we have to make our decisions moving forward on a fact-based platform.
Thank you. Now we're going to pivot here a little bit. And the next question, Mr. Gibson, you're first. What do you see as the most important role of SLOCOG, which is the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, in addressing regional issues in our county? And on what issues do you think they can be most effective?
SLOCOG is one of those. I see the moderator smiling because she knows SLOCOG. The Council of Governments, 7 incorporated cities, 5 supervisors, handles mostly transportation planning dollars. It is one of the longest standing regional bodies to try to do good things for San Luis Obispo County. They have a number of really important issues in front of them. And first and foremost is housing. We're going to be acting on a housing and infrastructure plan at our next SLOCOG meeting, which is coming up next Wednesday. And that is, again, a cooperative effort that it's going to take to solve our housing issue, to try to find where the barriers to creating the infrastructure that supports housing are. And we need to work together as 7 cities and a county to identify that. We're also going to be asked to approve, and it's absolutely the right thing to do, an affordable by design analysis. That is, the market here is ridiculous in terms of house costs, but is there a way we can go with market rate housing that working families can afford? And yeah, if you look at the right kind of housing and you put it in the right place and you have the right supports and you have the right infrastructure, we think there is. And so this item before us on Wednesday is going to be extremely important, and that just starts to scratch the surface of what SLOCOG could do for this county.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
Using regional boards to supersede zoning for cities or areas that are controlled by the county is a giant step that we have to look at carefully. Each part of the county has different interests, and those interests have to be respected. Atascadero may want zoning in one way. A county area like Templeton may wish to have it differently. I think we need to respect individual segments of our community, and the trouble with regional boards is that it's one solution fits all, and sometimes that's terribly unfair.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add anything?
So at the outside, I indicated that you're going to hear differences. And right here, you've heard of a fundamental difference in terms of experience and understanding of county government. Mr. Jones, not having been in our county long enough, doesn't realize that SLOCOG has nothing to do with zoning. It does not intrude on the sovereign ability of any city or the county to set its own land use regulations. Rather, what it does is try to shape incentives so that those jurisdictions can succeed at goals that they have all outlined. In particular, each of our 8 jurisdictions have housing elements that talk about the need to put in affordable housing at different levels. And the question is how we're going to do that. Well, that's going to take some challenging conversations to move resources to those places where they can most effectively do it. It's completely voluntary. The city has got a completely voluntary decision to make as to whether they want to embrace housing. With it comes transportation money. Maybe that works for them.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
No.
Okay. All right. Mr. Jones, what is your opinion on the effectiveness of the cannabis permitting and code enforcement programs in the county?
Well, I think that probably most of the people in this room know that code enforcement for cannabis has shifted originally with the planning department and now shifted predominantly with the sheriffs. There's been problems, and I know in the Templeton area, a project that I voted for, but in retrospect had lots of problems with smell, and there were many complaints, and yet code enforcement didn't seem to effectively address the issue. I think that the sheriffs may do a better job. There's some fear among planning personnel when it comes to dealing with cannabis entrepreneurs. I think the sheriffs tend to be less fearful, and hopefully things will improve. I think we have to be careful with cannabis that they stay between the white lines of the rules. If you have smell, you've got to deal with it. If you have other issues that impinge on the neighbor's property, that has to be dealt with.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Well, quite frankly, cannabis in this county, both the county's response to it and the industry itself is in quite a mess right now. And a lot of that mess is the making of our Board of Supervisors majority, who have made a series of inconsistent policy decisions and a series of really inconsistent project decisions. This industry, which is legal, I will remind everybody, in the state of California, has an opportunity to be part of the economic mix here and easily accommodated. But instead of getting it in and organized, we end up with a huge illegal black market. And because of policy decisions such as our board majority's refusal to allow storefront dispensaries in incorporated communities, we lack a lot of money, and we are spending your taxpayer dollars to try to regulate the cannabis industry, which should be creating tax dollars to regulate itself.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
It's certainly true that the cannabis industry costs us more in regulation than we receive in taxes. It's a net loss for the county.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add anything?
Well, so we got to come up with a rational solution here. We got to make project decisions based on facts rather than friendships, I guess you'd say. We've seen a lot of inconsistent findings made to approve or deny projects. And we need to go back and look at the fundamental basis of our regulatory structure and what kind of cannabis activities we should allow. You look at the incorporated cities that are doing this right. Grover Beach is one of them. And they are generating a great deal of tax dollars. Why doesn't the county of San Luis Obispo allow storefront dispensaries? It's because cannabis comes with a lot of baggage. We got to get past that, folks. We got to understand that this is a legal business that we need to regulate properly.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, mental health is an issue throughout California, and San Luis Obispo is feeling the pain due to a lack of mental health treatment. Name specific actions you will do to increase treatment and comprehensive care for individuals in need.
So, first, it starts with figuring out what we need. And when we considered our new approach to homelessness, I added a request to our behavioral health division, which includes both mental health and addiction treatment services, to come up with a strategic plan for increasing that. This was something that has been thought about for a long time, but I said, we've got to do this now. Partly because it's so important to addressing homelessness. That's going to show us where we are. And even paying patients have a hard time accessing mental health services. you know, we're seeing a lot of action at the state level and a lot more resources. So my specific actions are to invest the mental health dollars that we have in a coordinated way to provide more outpatient clinics, to work at developing more inpatient settings, whether that's in the jail as we work to restore inmates to competency. And, you know, it's a big topic. We can talk a lot about mental health in our jail, which happens to be the largest inpatient mental health facility aside from Atascadero State Hospital in the county. But we've got to do both. We've got to go inpatient, outpatient, cut wait times, and recruit and retain a workforce, which will be probably the most challenging part of it.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
I certainly agree that we need to have more acute mental health availability, care beds. This is an item that Mr. Gibson and I don't disagree much. I think that we need to look at what we're doing in our community. Fundamental to our homelessness problem is folks with serious mental health problems and also folks with overlapping addiction problems. And if we don't solve those problems, we don't have much of a chance of solving our homeless problem.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add anything?
Absolutely. Let me talk a little bit about what we have done during my time in office. There are two facilities that I think are really important. One's called a crisis stabilization unit. It's only 8 beds, but it is an idea that exists on our health campus near the old General Hospital, where folks can come before they get into full-blown crisis to get treatment that's going to stabilize them. That facility is actually underutilized, and part of the strategic plan is going to be to make that more available. The second is what we call a jail-based competency treatment program. A lot of folks who are arrested are deemed not competent to stand trial. They have to be, their mental health needs to be restored. The old school was to do it at a state hospital like Atascadero, but the wait times were just ridiculous. So working with our healthcare provider in the jail, some state funding, and the sheriff, I was more than happy to lead in getting a jail-based competency. It has won a state award for restoring felony inmates to be able to stand trial.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
We need more acute beds for acute mental health crisis.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, since you both addressed homelessness, this next question states, do you support the new countywide strategic plan to address homelessness? What will you do to make it happen? And the second part is, have you ever volunteered at a homeless shelter?
Okay, do I go first on this one?
You do.
Okay. I happen to like most of the 5-year plan that's been presented to centralize care for the homeless. In this plan, they hope to reduce homelessness by half over a 5-year period. In review of this plan, I like the idea of having a section or a department that handles the homelessness and it be located in one spot. I think there's some flaws in the plan, however. I believe that something as important as homelessness should not be managed by multiple layers of management. This section or department should report directly to the chief administrative officer of the county and not up through the social services department. I think that, of course, this is important and we have to move forward, but we need to move forward in a way that we don't get lost in multiple layers of management. And the whole idea of centralizing things is so you don't have that. I have not worked or helped at a mental health facility, but as an intern, I worked on a detox.
Thank you. I appreciate you respecting the stop sign. You will have time for your rebuttal. Mr. Gibson.
You don't mess with a timekeeper.
You don't.
So I have not served a full overnight shift in a homeless shelter, but I have visited various of our shelters and other homeless facilities on a number of occasions to make sure I understood what folks need and what we can do to make them work. Most recently, just last week, Supervisor Ortiz Legg and I stood for about an hour and talked to some of the residents at the Oklahoma Safe Parking site. I am absolutely enthused about our new strategic plan on homelessness, a new approach, which we have Councilmember Susan Funk sitting right here in the second row to thank in large part for leading as we get this on the way. This has demonstrable lines of effort, as we're calling them, about building shelter housing, about increasing services to the homeless, about making sure that our data systems are up and running, and a couple of other things that we need to do to make it work. Two keys to it. One of them is what's called an action team that is comprised of the city managers and our county administrative officer. Those are the folks that are going to get stuff done. I'm urging all of my elected colleagues to stay out of their way and let them do their job. The second is a Citizens Homelessness Oversight Council that we just put in place 2 days ago. That is going to hold every jurisdiction accountable for making progress on this, and I think it's going to be a great result.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
I'd like to just finish what I was saying. As an intern, I worked in a clinic that worked on detoxing women that were pregnant so that their babies would not be born addicted. I think I understand one leg of our homeless problem is addiction. Also, early in my medical career, for 7.5 years, I worked as a primary care physician before I took a residency in orthopedic surgery. Part of my responsibility was I did consultations for medical issues in the psychiatric unit. And I did a number of consultations. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I did work with those folks that had troubling psychiatric problems, evaluating them for their medical needs. I do have some experience in this arena. I have not volunteered at a homeless shelter overnight.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add anything?
Yeah, absolutely. Another big, big topic that we could talk literally for hours on. Again, as with so many of our challenging issues here, it is political will that is going to be needed. And that's where I bring a set of relationships that I think are going to be fundamentally important to getting this plan to work the best it possibly can. Politics at one level is a very personal business. You form relationships, bonds with other elected officials, with staff members, with agencies that all have a role in getting this done. We need to discuss where we're going to do this housing, how much of it we're going to do, who's going to pay for it, how it's going to be operated. And that's going to be a complicated discussion that sometimes, and a bit less now, but sometimes we've had a negative community reaction to providing services for homeless. It is a matter of an elected official to lead to make sure we get this job done.
Thank you. I have been asked by the Chamber of Commerce, and they are hosting and sponsoring us, to take a 5-minute break. So, and after that, we have 4 questions left. Okay, we are going to get started. I want to be respectful to everybody's time here tonight. Yeah. Not for these poor guys to sit up there for another hour. Okay. Okay, ladies and gentlemen. I need my glass and the spoon, right? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we would like to get started, please. We're live on television. This is streaming live.
Ladies and gentlemen,
If you would please come to order.
Where's my gavel when I need
know,
it, right?
I know, without the gavel, you're...
I'll do that, I'll knock. Thank you very much. No more breaks. Okay, we're going to start. Oh, I love that whistle. Thank you. Oh, we're close. Okay, great. Mr. Gibson, are you ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Red lights on,
yes,
both
ma'am.
Candidates. Great.
A
few minutes ago, we were talking about respectfulness in neighborhoods, and this question is right along those lines. What is the Board of Supervisors' role in overseeing and regulating the number of Airbnbs, vacation rental properties? And how does this impact the inventory of homes for both local residents and home buyers?
That is a fundamental land use question, and that has evolved over the years. Certainly in the former District 2, there are, along the coast, there are a huge number of vacation rentals. And the question of regulating them came up actually before I took office. My predecessor, Supervisor Bianchi, dealt with that in 2004 or maybe 2002. And it was decided that there did need to be some control on how they were operated, where they were located, and how many. The weak spot of that in Cambria and Cayucas was that they allowed folks to grandfather themselves in. So both of those communities have around 400 homes that are run as vacation rentals apiece, or at least are permitted as vacation rentals apiece. That has had a huge effect on the long-term housing market, especially in Cayucas. When my two sons were in school, Cayucas school had a little over 300 students. Now they have fewer than 200. And a lot of that is the drying up of the long-term housing market. We recently took up this issue in Los Osos, and they came in, the community had an extensive discussion and came in and decided that a cap of 50 short-term rentals was appropriate for Los Osos. That's 1% of roughly of the housing stock, and it took a long time, but through a lot of discussion, we got that through the Coastal Commission, so that is now how they are regulated in Los Osos.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
I think that vacation rental policy needs to vary according to the community. In the Adelaide area, they have an ordinance that allows a density of vacation rentals of no vacation rental being closer than 1,500 feet. That's what people there want. Other parts of the county want different regulations. I think that it needs to be local. I think that Cayucas should be able to decide what they want to do. Cambria needs to decide what they want to do, and so on. I do think that vacation rentals present some problems in terms of available housing. If you have too many vacation rental units, you tie up housing, often smaller housing, that decreases the supply of housing for those folks that are seeking to buy a home. So we have to think about that when we make these policies, but I favor local control over these issues.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add anything?
Well, in those unincorporated communities, I think Mr. Jones has to understand that the local control is the Board of Supervisors. Now, that said, we have crafted the different ordinances now in Cambria, Cayucas, Los Osos, and Avila Beach to be specific to the geography, the density of housing, the particular local needs of those houses. I think the conversion of housing supply to essentially visitor serving use has a huge effect on housing, in the sense not only that there's fewer long-term vacation rentals, but the cost of housing goes up because that's essentially having a license to operate a business out of your home. And realtors regularly advertise that these homes have vacation rental licenses and thus, you know, justify a higher price. I get it that it's a market. But if we are really going to solve our housing problems, we're going to have to look at how effectively and fairly to regulate that market.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
Only one small thing. I believe that the Board of Supervisors should support what each individual area or region wants in their area. I don't believe that the Adelaide and Cayucas are the same. And they're both unincorporated areas, but they have different needs. And we should understand that there needs to be different policies in different parts of the county on this issue.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, are you in favor of the proposed wind farm off the Morro Bay coast? Why or why not?
I'm in favor of wind energy, but I would prefer to see it on land. I understand that the proponents of this project believe that it will not be visible. I hope that's true. I do believe that most of the people living on the coast don't want to look out and see windmills. The other problem with offshore windmills is the same problem you have with offshore drilling rigs. The decommissioning costs are huge, and these basically iron metal facilities don't last very long with salt water. And we have to consider the cost of putting up these structures, and then the decommissioning 20 years later adds substantially to the cost. Windmills on land that aren't exposed to salt are going to last longer and produce electricity for a longer period of time.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Well, to suggest that the impacts of offshore wind, floating wind platforms are comparable to that of offshore drilling rigs forgets the fact that we have had a number of oil wells blow out offshore. I was in high school in Santa Barbara in 1969 when that platform tarred the beaches. So the impacts of offshore wind is not nearly comparable to offshore oil production, and it is a necessary part of our renewable energy future. I'm fully supportive of it. Yes, there's environmental issues that need to be worked out, but as an economic development tool, it's going to be tremendous, and as a renewable resource, it's going to have the potential right now for 1.5 times the output of Diablo Canyon plant. On land, where are we going to do that? And I'd be interested in the conversation with the NIMBYs when that gets put up. Basically, most of the land spots have been occupied now, and that's why people are looking at the much more challenging offshore. And as to the aesthetics, I think we got to have a revision of what looks beautiful to us.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
No.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Let me speak about that. I got a little bit jammed in being respectful of our timer. We've heard a lot about, well, I don't want to look at the tops of an offshore turbine 25 or 30 miles away. And I have to really, that's one of those, I've had to have hard conversations on a number of projects. The Los Osos sewer prompted one or two hard conversations. The business of offshore wind is a whole lot more tractable. And if we want to get to our future where we need to reduce greenhouse gases and get to renewable energy, looking at the tip of a windmill at 25 miles is a small price to pay. Now, I get it. People are very passionate about that. I have been in land conservation all through my public life here in the county, and I get aesthetic preservation, but we're in a crisis, folks, in terms of global climate change, and this is a small but important piece of solving that problem.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, how will you support local chambers of commerce so that they can support their local business community?
Well, I'll give you an example. The county has invested $75,000 a year for 3 years with the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce to set up a family-friendly workplace coordinator These are monies that we took from our economic development reserves, I believe, matched it with $75,000 from the first five commission, which I'm proud to serve on, and $75,000, I believe, came from the city of San Luis Obispo, so that this individual, whose husband happens was in the room here, Ms. Christina Lefebvre-Latner, can advise businesses all over the county as to how to make themselves more family-friendly. It's a really key part of recruiting and retaining the next generation of workers here. And so we're totally excited about that, and I can't wait to get the report on how that's going. But that's the kind of partnership where you come to the private sector with one or more public sector folks to get a job done. We've, the chamber in San Luis, which is the one I have the most experience with, has a great record of that. I was proud to partner with the local chamber here to set up the co-working space that is recently opened or soon to open, recently opened, and is expanding. Haven't had the tour recently. So all manner of public-private partnerships that we can engage.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
My approach may be some different. I think that the Chamber of Commerce members will appreciate my approach, which is one of trying to deregulate to allow businesses to prosper. That I would support labor, business, tourism, agriculture by trying to reduce unnecessary regulation. If you have a dry cleaning business, regulation can drive you out of business. And I think that what the Chamber of Commerce wants is for businesses to prosper.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add?
You know, this question of deregulation in business is an old conservative talking point, but I think we got to look at the new world here. And I'm going to again reference the San Luis Obispo Chamber only because that's the group I have the most experience with. But I commend to you their economic vision for the county. And it starts with quality of life. That is a fundamental aspect. And that has led them to support a whole variety of things, like family-friendly workplace, like our efforts to expand childcare, like efforts to increase land conservation so that communities are more livable, more inviting, more attractive to investment and to their employees. And I think what they have done, they've been doing for quite a long time. I think they have a lot of opportunity to inspire, particularly here in Atascadero, where I see that sort of thing happening downtown. Look at the area around the Sunken Gardens and how much that has changed. There's real possibility here.
Mr. Jones.
I have no more comment. I favor deregulation. I think that favors business.
Thank you. So coming from the League of Women Voters, what strategies would you suggest to improve civil discourse during board meetings? Mr. Jones, you're first.
I think that in looking at a recent board meeting where residents of the safe parking area were trying to draw attention to some of the problems with that, to have the chairman of the board shut down the meeting and not let them speak, certainly didn't make things for more civil discourse. What happened in that meeting was when the chairman left, the other people in the room asked them to speak and they spoke. I think that if you encourage discourse, if you treat people badly.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
So once again, Mr. Jones grossly misrepresents this situation, and I would urge anybody to look at the video of that. We had individuals who were quite clearly disrupting our general public comment period, and we'd already taken well over 45 minutes of general public comment on a variety of issues, including the questions of homelessness. In the end, we were able to converse with those folks offline. But the key to civil discourse is respecting everybody that's in the room. And I am in the chair right now, my third tour of duty, as it were. And what I tell folks when I talk about chairing a meeting is that I am there on behalf of everyone in the room. And when we put together an agenda, we put together business items that we are to take action on, and we're required to agendize those. One of the agenda items is general public comment. But all of that has to be managed in a way that is fair to all who are involved in coming before our board for a meeting. So there occasionally, and especially in general public comment, but other items as well, people get agitated, they're passionate. I get that. I try to deal very calmly on the fact of everybody has to share the time that we are together in a reasonable way so that everybody's views can be heard and everybody's business can be transacted.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
I would also encourage you to look at the tape of that meeting. I suspect that when the intermission was called, that the taping was not continued, and you might not be able to hear the homeless people being able to give their impression of problems on the safe parking area.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson?
There's another aspect to civil discourse. I applaud the league a few years ago, is it four or something like that? They came forward with a big effort to outline the components of civil discourse, and that was really great. But to me, civil discourse is more than simply speaking politely and calmly to one another. In terms of the job of the Board of Supervisors, being civil is also to make our decisions based on facts. It is also to engage each other in substantive conversation on the merits of issues. Whether we are passionate about it or not is not so important as the fact that we're really getting to the substance. We deal with a lot of consequential things. Sometimes we deal with less consequential things. But in making a decision, I always aim to have a fact-based decision made and thus can be held accountable to that.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, what issue do you identify as the most crucial one facing the county in the near future?
Homelessness. And again, we can talk for hours on homelessness. It is a disgrace in the wealthiest country that I've ever lived in to see folks living unsheltered. And our population of unhoused residents is of a higher percentage of unsheltered. I think it's something like 80% of our homeless folks are living outside. I think it's a disgrace to see senior citizens living on fixed incomes whose rent has been raised, who are now forced to live in their vehicles. If they're lucky, it's an RV. If they're not, it's a car. And so that, from a moral perspective, is absolutely an outrage to me. The human misery that's there has, I think, finally become so obvious that as a community, we are no longer able to turn and turn away from it. And it's a natural human reaction to try to think that this doesn't exist, but it does right now. And so housing these individuals, getting them the services, getting on a track to permanent housing, that has benefits to them. It also has benefits to us as a community. And if you want to make the accountant's argument, you can make that, the reduction in trips to the emergency room or into jail or however. But to me, it's fundamentally a moral issue and one that we are finally, I think, getting substantive about taking care of.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
Could you repeat the question?
Of course. What issue do you identify as the most crucial one facing the county in the near future?
I believe that the most important issue is public safety. I will support the sheriff and CAL FIRE. And members of this community that live within the city limits of Atascadero know that they have a fire department and a sheriff's department, but they're backup. The backup for Atascadero police is the sheriff, and the backup for Atascadero fire is the CAL FIRE. If you go to some of the more rural areas of our county, people are terrified about the response times. We need more coverage, not less coverage. I will not defund public safety. I will support fire and law enforcement.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, would you care to add anything?
You know, stoking fear of crime is another conservative talking point that we've heard many, many, many times. But that said, if I might, since I have the floor, that said, public safety is the first and foremost responsibility of government. And it is, in fact, in our county government, listed as our first budget priority, right after we take care of our state mandates and pay our debts. But the first thing we spend our discretionary money on is public safety. And that has been the way it has always been. And public safety is fully funded to the extent of our budget. And that is in lean times, and that is in good times. In lean times, if we have to cut budgets, public safety is cut the least by maybe suffering less than a quarter of the cuts that other departments. In good times, we expand the public safety budget because we know that that's our fundamental role. So the key to me in public safety right now is adapting to the new reality. New court cases that make law enforcement have to do different things and deal with mental health in ways they haven't before.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
I will not cut funding for public safety. I know that Mr. Gibson in 2020 did vote for approximately $1 million, slightly less than that, and cut in funds for public safety. That meant divided over CAL FIRE, sheriffs, probation, and the DA's office. I will not do that.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Jones, this is our last question, and then we're gonna do our closing comments. What is the one thing you would like to accomplish as a supervisor in the next 4 years?
I would like to streamline and improve planning and building department. It needs to be better, faster, and cheaper. We are inflicting problems on ordinary people who can't afford houses by adding huge costs to this department. We need what I mentioned earlier about having serial pre-approved plans would certainly help. Secondary housing units, but pre-approved plans for even larger units, starting at 1,000, 1,200, 1,400, 1,600 square feet home, so that the person can get things approved without a lengthy, expensive process.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. Quick correction. The cuts to public safety that Dr. Jones misrepresented were unanimously passed by our board and supported by our sheriff, and we also pulled $3 million out of reserves to fund the sheriff's department so they didn't have to take harder cuts. The one thing I'd like to accomplish in the next 4 years is to see our new strategic approach to homelessness meet its goal of 50% reduction in homelessness. That's a stretch goal because that's a 5-year plan. I want to make it a 4-year plan because it's that big a deal. And, you know, if we can accomplish that, that will be amazing. We, as a society, have struggled with homelessness for a long time. We haven't committed. We now have accountability built into our system, and we've got to perform. So if we can get there in 4 years, that would be fantastic. As you can imagine, having been at this and exploring the dealing with the breadth of county issues, I've got way more than one thing that I'd like to see accomplished. That I spoke of the restoration of the Cayucas Vets Hall, a huge economic development issue on the coast, and the restoration of a classic building. I want to see the conservation of the lands around Diablo Canyon, where we can have 14 more miles of the coastal trail that will bring more visitors to our county. I want to see new campgrounds. I want to see our tourist business thrive. So there's a lot on my
thank you
list.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, would you care to add anything?
No.
Mr. Gibson. Would you care to add anything?
Can I have more than one, please?
You have 1 minute. That's all you get.
Well, let's see. One minute. I want to see the plan for the groundwater sustainability plan for the Paso Robles groundwater basin actually start to make some difference. We're overdrafting that basin. The latest drought year was 80,000 acre feet coming out of storage. It was a tremendous amount, and I know we can be successful because we are being successful in Los Osos. That basin's been under adjudication since 2004, and in the last 6 years of a significant drought, we are seeing well levels rise. That's because we have a plan. We have a group that is committed to executing the plan. We have the oversight of the court, and we know that securing the water supply for the community of Los Osos is fundamentally important. So I know it can be done, so water's on my list as well.
Thank you. So now this comes to the conclusion of the questions, and now we'll go to the closing statement. Mr. Jones, you have 2 minutes.
I want to thank the chamber and the League of Women Voters for all they've done to make this event happen today. It's given me a chance to show you the things I care about and for you to ask questions. Three generations of my family now live in the new District 2. I care greatly about this wonderful place that we live in, and I want to protect it for future generations. As a surgeon, I worked more than 60 hours a week, and I'm happy to work just as hard representing you. My door will be open. I want to hear from you. Please feel free to talk with me, ask questions, make recommendations. I will be your anti-corruption honest supervisor. I am Dr. Bruce Jones, the best Bruce for District 2. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Gibson.
Madam Chair, thank you so much for your moderation, for the chamber, for the high school, and for the league in general to put on this fundamentally important event. You know, as I said at the top, these forums are fundamentally important to informing the electorate about the decision that faces them in the next 6 weeks, just less than 6 weeks, because they put clear on the record the differences between two candidates of which you have a choice. And I think you've heard on multiple occasions this evening the differences between Mr. Jones and myself, both in terms of our knowledge of county government, our understanding of county government, our experience in county government, our vision for county government, our priorities for what we want to see accomplished for this community. Today, we need experienced leadership. The situation here is the most challenging we've seen in decades, if not generations. And you deserve county government that you can be proud of. We've come through a very difficult 10-year stretch of some really bad decisions. I don't have time to list them all right now, but our board majority has damaged this county. With my reelection, we can start to reverse that. And I pledge to you to make fact-based decisions and to stand accountable for the results. I'm proud to have the endorsement of over 40 current and former elected officials, Planned Parenthood, the SLO County Employees Association, and over 850 individuals. I also have been very grateful to receive the endorsement of my colleagues statewide to be elected our state association's second vice president. These are tough times, but we're on the threshold of greatness. I ask for your vote, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. So with that, let's thank our candidates. We're not quite done, Mr. Jones. We have a few thank yous. But you fielded 17 questions, and really appreciate that. And the quality of questions that came from the audience was terrific. So good job, all of you. We really tried to get to as many as possible. I do want to let people know that AGP Video has been filming this, and it's live streamed, and you can go back on slowspan.org to revisit. You can also go to the league's website and also see the taping. That's lwvslo.org. So that's helpful. Again, we all want to thank you for taking the time, not only to come, but for your willingness to be in public office. It's tough and it's demanding, and we need people to step up and serve. So thank you. And I do believe that the Atascadero Chamber would like to make some clothes. There he is. And don't forget to vote November 8th.
I may or may not have submitted a question about chambers. Thanks for answering that. Let's see. I'd like to close this forum by thanking our candidates for participating. And I think we should all give a round of applause to the League of Women Voters for doing an amazing job. I echo Shelley's comments about please remember to vote on November 8th or earlier by mail-in ballot. Thank you again. And please take a moment to visit with our supervisor candidates and our city council candidates who will be lingering around the Orange Wall or just outside. Thank you again.